This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On Friday, Vermont's Public Service Board issued a ruling giving a certificate of public good to Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant to operate through the end of this year. The ruling affirmed a memorandum of understanding that the state and Entergy reached in December. This MOU detailed some of the financial contributions Entergy has said it will make, among them $10 million to Windham County for economic development in the next 5 years, $5.2 million to the Clean Energy Development Fund, half of that going to projects in Windham County, and a $25 million payment to a site restoration fund that Entergy will make by the end of 2017. But many anti-nuclear activists think the PSB erred in its judgment. Ray Shattis is with the nuclear watchdog group New England Coalition. He says the board should not have set aside all the questions of trust and responsibility that have plagued Entergy in its operation of VY.
That is not reflected in the order. The Public Service Board makes a really definite point of saying that this certificate of public good throws out the window all of what we've been arguing about for the past almost 6 years. I think that's wrong.
That frustration is the backdrop to the Vermont legislature's and Governor Peter Shumlin's forceful push to shut down Yankee immediately. So the state's decision to enter into an agreement with Entergy has raised some eyebrows. First, let's put some of those questions to our guests today, who can also give us a greater understanding of the agreements between the state and Entergy. Chris Recchia is Commissioner of the Department of Public Service. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jane. Nice to be here.
And Mike Twomey is a spokesperson for Entergy Corporation. Mike, thank you for being with us.
I'm happy to be here, Jane. Thank you.
Chris Recchia, I'll start with you. Given the state's frustration with Entergy over the last several years, at least, why enter into an alliance with them at all?
Right. Well, I think, Jane, it's really important to look at what the alternatives are and would be. And when Entergy announced that they were going to close at the end of the year, it really created a different opportunity and environment for us to work cooperatively on a logical shutdown and wind down of the facility. I think the board got this right. When you read the decision, you see that they said this would be probably very different if they were evaluating a 20-year CPG, and certainly my department and the state were opposing that. But nonetheless, for the benefit of the workers in the area, workers at the plant, and economic development of the area and smooth transition, this was the thing that was in the state interest, and that's why I think the board ruled the way they did.
So how do you say that that's not an about-face from saying the plant has to be shut down immediately, which has been the state's position in the past?
Right. Well, even when we were talking about that in the context of a 20-year CPG and opposing that, it is not like anyone ever expected that as soon as the decision came out that the next day the plant would be closed. There needs to be a transition and a wind down anyway, and it likely would take, you know, many months. So I think we're in the same ballpark that we would have been.
Mike Twomey, what does Entergy get out of this in entering an agreement with the state, which, you know, again, you and the state have not been getting along very well in the past few years? And beyond the possibility of the Public Service Board perhaps looking favorably upon an agreement, why was this good for Entergy?
Well, the main objective that we had going into these negotiations, once we made the announcement that the plant was going to shut down at the end of 2014, was to provide certainty for our employees and a respectful transition for those workers who have really done an outstanding job of providing clean, reliable electric service for Vermont for 40 years. And as we sat down at the table, I wanted to make sure that we could get a full, uninterrupted run through the end of the year, end of 2014, so that employees could focus on running the plant safely and reliably and have adequate time to look at what their options were after the plant shut down.
So what did Entergy have to give up then in order to get that? I mean, this has been presented as an agreement and, you know, that the sides have hashed out. So what financial contributions have you agreed to make that perhaps you hadn't originally planned on making?
Well, you outlined them at the beginning of the show. We've got economic development payments that we're making to Windham County totaling $10 million over the next 5 years. We are releasing $5.2 million approximately to the Clean Energy Development Fund. And we're setting aside specific dollars into a site restoration trust fund. And, you know, at least as to the first two payments, we had, in our view, no obligation to make those payments. We certainly had no obligation to make any payments for economic development transition. There was maybe an argument between the parties as to whether we had to release these clean energy development funds, but I think we probably had the high side of the argument. And so that's $15.2 million that right off the top we would not have made those payments to Vermont if we had continued to operate. And as to the Site Restoration Trust Fund, we certainly had the obligation, have the obligation to deal with site restoration issues, but I think it was an important statement by us to set aside money in a specific trust fund so that we could allay any concerns that people had. And I think that, you know, Commissioner Recchia pointed out the real key question that the board faced, which was, what is the alternative to an agreement? Had we not reached this agreement, we very well may have been in litigation with the state through the end of the year. We believe we probably had a good opportunity to continue to run while the litigation was going. So had we not reached this agreement, we may have been able to run through the end of the year anyway, and the state would not have gotten any of the benefits that they've gotten under the settlement agreement. Now, what we achieved through the settlement is we removed this cloud of uncertainty that was hanging over the plant. And, you know, our employees, some of them have been there a very long time and are near the end of their career. Some of them have not been there very long and are in the middle of their careers. And those people naturally might have been looking for other opportunities outside of Vermont to continue to be nuclear professionals. And we wanted to make sure that we did everything we could to keep the employees focused, give them a respectful transition, and end the operation of Vermont Yankee in on a high note with another professional run with no incidents, and terminate the operations of the facility in a way that everybody who works at the plant could be proud of.
And that's now expected to be at the end of this year. And listeners, I want to invite you into the conversation. We are talking about the Public Service Board's decision to continue to let Vermont Yankee operate until the end of the year. And we're looking at an agreement between the state and Entergy and some of the details in that agreement. We're talking a little bit about financial details, but we're going to get into some other issues that are in an agreement between the state and Yankee that wasn't looked at by the Public Service Board. And if you have questions or thoughts on this and want to share them, you can post them at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition. Or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go now to another voice, James Dumont. He's a lawyer for VPIRG, and he's on the line with us now. The Vermont Public Interest Research Group has been deeply critical of the Public Service Board's ruling. James Dumont, what did VPIRG want the Public Service Board to do differently?
Good afternoon. I think it makes sense to start with what the board actually said in its recent ruling, just to make sure we're all on the same page. On pages 4 and 5 of the board's order, it said, reviewed Entergy's history in Vermont, and it concluded, the company has engaged in unacceptable conduct that erodes public trust and confidence in its capacity to act in good faith and to engage in fair dealing. An investigative report prepared by Vermont's Attorney General concluded that Entergy VY, quote, repeatedly misled state officials with direct misstatements and repeatedly failed to clarify misperception. That's just a small slice of a very unsavory pie.
Okay, but we just heard from Commissioner Recchia, who said, look, a shutdown would have taken some time anyway. It wasn't going to be immediate, even when the words immediately were the words that were being used by the state. And Mike Twomey has said Entergy, because the state is willing to say, yes, we'll give you smooth sailing, Entergy is now putting forth some money for site restoration, for economic development, and other things like that. Why doesn't that make it worth it to you?
Well, I heard Mr. Toomey just now say the state would not have gotten any of the benefits of the agreement. And that's just not true. The Department of Public Service itself represented to the Public Service Board in its own briefing in this case in the fall that the board had the authority under state law that's not preempted to order Entergy to do things that are better for the state of Vermont than are in the MOU. For example, the expert witnesses put on by the department testified that the cost of site restoration, non-radiological site restoration, so it's not preempted, is somewhere between $95 million and $225 million. This MOU says that Entergy is going to guarantee it's going to come up with $25 million to pay for that. In what the department itself asked the board to do in the fall, they said the board has the authority to order Entergy and or its parent corporation to come up with a lot more money than that to guarantee we'll have site restoration.
So that's okay, one so example. Commissioner Recchia, why didn't you then push for more?
Sure. Well, under that circumstance, we do have the authority to do site restoration. The board certainly had that authority. The piece that Jim is missing is that the board had no authority over when decommissioning would occur. And as a result, if you put it in safe store for 50 years, then site restoration costs are likely to be much higher. We also had no idea what needs to be restored there, and we through the agreement with Entergy got Entergy to agree to do a site assessment by the end of this year that will help us understand what's there, so that we can negotiate site restoration standards and then get a better sense of the costs. All these costs are just estimates based on not even knowing what you're trying to achieve. So what we did was get $25 million in hopefully cash or cash equivalents in an account that could then grow over time while we're dealing with spent fuel and while we're dealing with the actual radiological decommissioning, so that the site restoration fund is more valuable by the time we need it. That said, the existing decommissioning trust fund is also supposed to be used for site restoration, and Entergy is committed to do site restoration to the standards that we work to negotiate. And they have that obligation regardless of the cost.
We're going to get more into the decommissioning timeline and whether any of that is enforceable. And Mike Toomey, I know you probably want to comment on that. But Jim Dumont, we just have you for a couple of minutes here because I know you're in a deposition, so thank you for stepping out. But VPIRG had other concerns as well.
Well, I'd like just to respond to what the commissioner said, and I appreciate the commissioner's honesty and integrity, and I know he's acting the best he can to protect people of Vermont. We just disagree with the conclusions he's reached. Number one, the first benefit that the commissioner mentioned is without this agreement, we have no control over when decommissioning will happen. Well, with this agreement, we don't have control either. The MOU approved by the board has nothing to do with when decommissioning will happen. That's in a separate settlement agreement that the board did not approve of.
That's right. Wasn't asked
to approve of. Right. And under that settlement agreement, it's 100% up to Entergy when they will begin actual decommissioning. They have to act in good faith, of course, but the quote I just read you from the board's order says we don't have any confidence that Entergy can act in good faith.
So, Jim Dumont, my understanding from what you're saying is that you think that the state should have continued to push to have Vermont Yankee shut down immediately and for more financial contributions. Is that your basic position?
No, not quite. The second part, you're correct about. The first part, we believe that Entergy should have had its CPG denied. We don't believe it's an acceptable precedent to look at a company like this with a history that the board found was horrendous and say, well, we're going to give you another CPG anyway. It's true, as Mr. Toomey just said, and as the commissioner just said, regardless of what the board might have decided because of the appeals process, it's quite likely Entergy would have continued to operate the plant until the end of 2014 anyway. So that's not really what's in dispute.
Jim Dumont is a lawyer with VPIRG. He's been telling us a little bit about why the Vermont Public Interest Research Group is unhappy with the Public Service Board's decision to grant Entergy Vermont Yankee a certificate of public good to operate through the rest of this year. Thank you so much for being on the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We are talking about this CPG. We're talking a little bit about the agreement the state and Entergy have entered and what's in both the memorandum of understanding that the Public Service Board took a look at and a separate agreement that was not subject to Public Service Board ruling. We're going to get a little deeper into that when we continue, and we'd like to hear from you if you have questions about how this all works, what the timeline is, and what role the NRC plays in all of this. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can email vermontedition@vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Chris Recchia, Commissioner of the Department of Public Service, and Mike Toomey, spokesperson for Entergy Corporation, are sharing the details of negotiations the state and Entergy have been having over the operation of Vermont Yankee and some of the financial details that will go along with decommissioning. Listeners, if you have questions about how this all works and what legal rights the state has in all of this, call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Mike Toomey, we heard from James Dumont about Entergy's reputation in Vermont, and the Public Service Board had some pretty withering comments in its ruling as well. How do you respond to that?
Well, unfortunately, Jane, we don't have enough time on this show to deal with all of the, I'll call them drive-by misrepresentations from Mr. Dumont about the agreement and what it addresses and what it does not address. The board's order is 98 pages. And it's the accumulation of many hours of testimony and submissions in writing by all the parties. But I will say this: there was an acknowledgement at the hearing by me on several occasions that our performance in Vermont over the last 10 years has not been perfect. There's no question about that. The overall record of the company has been good. We have done all of the things that we said we would do when we bought the plant. We invested $400 million in its operation. We paid our employees on time. We paid our taxes on time. We were a good corporate citizen who participated in a very meaningful way in the charitable contributions that we made to the community around the plant. And I really take issue with anybody's glib descriptions of the company as having not fulfilled its obligations. There's no question that we have a couple of very serious issues that came up in front of the Public Service Board regarding testimony. There's been a lot of discussion about that over the years, and there's no real purpose, I don't think, in revisiting that here. But I really dispute the overall characterization of the company. In fact, we did public polling over most of the last 10 years. The last polls I did about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years by now, showed about 46% support for continued operation of the facility in Vermont compared to 41% opposition. So I think it's important to get a broader view of the company's perspective rather than just one attorney's representation for a client who was not satisfied with the outcome of the Public Service Board proceeding.
Well, so, and we are hearing from people around the state with differing opinions and a broad spectrum. Mike says the Public Service Board is as riddled with defects and deficiencies as Vermont Yankee itself. Vermonters have been clamoring for its shutdown for over 30 years, and even after Entergy decides to close up shop on its own, the PSB still capitulates and agrees to another year of menacing operation, deception, and pollution. If we were smart, we would shut down the Public Service Board at the same time. On the other hand, Guy Page is with the Vermont Energy Partnership, a group that supports Vermont Yankee, and he writes in to say the PSB decision is a rare win-win for the employees and the state of Vermont government. Certainly for the employees, a windfall for the state energy fund, and of course, a second chance for Windham County. I want to move on and talk a little bit about the decommissioning timeline, mm-hmm. because, you know, as James Dumont mentioned, this is not something the state can control. The NRC allows 50 years for the decommissioning of a nuclear plant. And Mike Toomey, you've partnered with the state in a separate agreement to say that as soon as the decommissioning fund reaches the projected cost of decommissioning, Entergy will begin the process and not wait any longer. Why did you agree to that?
Well, we looked at the opportunity here to reach a constructive resolution with the state across a number of issues. And throughout the conversations, it was clear to us that it was an important issue for the administration, for the Vermont administration, that we not simply resort to what's called safe store, full safe store, which is a technical term, which means that you have up to 60 years to complete decommissioning. In this case, we decided, after a lot of back and forth between us and the state, that we could agree that when we have adequate funds in the Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund to complete decommissioning and spent fuel management activities, that we can start to decommission. And, you know, I'll go back again to Mr. Dumont, pretty straightforward misrepresentation of the agreement. It's not entirely up to Entergy. We are the ones who need to make the determination, but it's essentially a math problem. We have a little more than $600 million based on the last public notification in the Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund. We will be completing an analysis of what the cost of an update to the analysis of what the cost of decommissioning will be, and we will continue to track the performance of the Decommissioning Trust Fund along with the cost of completing decommissioning. And when we have more money in the Decommissioning Trust Fund than the cost of decommissioning, at that time we've committed to make a filing with the NRC to begin the process. That's a far cry from, you know, some 100% discretion with Entergy. We do have
to. Well, except you don't have to make that decision, right? That's an agreement that you've made with the state, but that you don't have to start immediately when the fund reaches its projected cost, especially given that the cost is an estimate, right?
I'm not sure, Jane, what your question is, but we do have the obligation in the agreement. That's the function of the agreement, to express obligations by both sides. We now have the obligation, once we make a determination that there is adequate funds in the Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund, to begin the process of getting NRC approval. Ultimately, the NRC has to concur that we have adequate funds. That's a determination that they need to make within their jurisdiction. But if we did not have this agreement, hypothetically, we could determine in 2022 that we had more money than we needed to do decommissioning, and we could still wait another 40 years until 2062, before we started doing the work on the site. That's a very important concession that we made in this agreement. It's a very important issue that the state got resolved, and it's one that some of the parties who did not like the idea of any agreement have glossed over repeatedly. They glossed over it during the hearings. They've glossed over it during their media interviews. But it's an important concession, and I'll say it's one that I'm not aware any other nuclear operator has made.
Chris Recky,
so
does the state have,
we think it's an important issue.
Does the state have the legal ability to enforce that agreement? I just want to clarify this. I mean,
yes, it's a contract between two parties. It's enforceable as a contract. Can I just back up a little bit? Because I think that we were touching on, I think, what is the most critical point here. Whenever I talk to Vermonters, and certainly I grew up in Brattleboro. My whole life in Vermont was with that plant operating. I understand that people's main concerns about the plant are the spent fuel and the decommissioning of that plant. Neither of those could be addressed before the board. And I think that's one thing that people really need to understand and be clear about, is the board has certain authorities over the operation and issuance of a CPG and the site restoration. But everything in between is purview of the NRC, unless we reached agreement with Entergy separately. And that's the purpose of the separate settlement agreement. And it covers the issues that I think are most important to Vermonters and that could not be addressed before the board. So as Mr. Toomey says, within 120 days of the funds being adequate, and I agree with him that this is a math problem. We will know at the end of the year, based on the site assessment, what needs to be done. We'll then be able to estimate how much it will cost to get there. And we do get monthly reports on the growth of the fund. And when it reaches the necessary level, Entergy will submit a letter requesting commencing decommissioning with the NRC. And they've agreed to proceed through that process to complete decommissioning and move right on to site restoration. So I think that that is very meaningful. And I also don't want to gloss over the management of the spent fuel, which is in the pool. There is some time when the new fuel coming out of the reactor at the end of the year needs to cool, but Entergy is committed to a prompt moving of that into dry cask storage, which I know is another important issue. Again, not something that the board could have dealt with.
Well, and while we're on that, let's go to Nancy, who's calling in from Putney. Hi, Nancy. You wanted to address that issue?
Hi. Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. I'm calling with the organization Safe and Green Campaign, which is a group of people that live within a 20-mile radius of the Vermont Yankee reactor. And I think we are most concerned about the removal of spent fuel. And I agree that Entergy has said they will commit to prompt removal, but there's no timeline, and B, that pool is already incredibly overfull, and very, very little of the 40 years' worth of spent fuel has been removed from that pool at this point. So, we feel very concerned about that. And I just wanted to say one more thing, which is for people that have not followed this, Bernie Sanders was very eloquent recently in testifying before Congress about some of the issues that Chris Recchia brought up, that the state really has no say in the decommissioning timeline, the spent fuel timeline, and many, many other issues where we feel strongly that the state and municipalities and people that live around the reactor who have the most to lose from some really frightening incident during decommissioning, we feel that people should support Bernie because he's been very good on this issue.
And that would take some federal changes. But, Nancy, thanks for your call. I want to give Mike Toomey a chance to respond, and we've got a lot to talk about. So, Mike Toomey, what do you think about what Nancy says?
Well, first of all, and I appreciate Nancy calling in, we do recognize there are some people in the community who have concerns. I mean, obviously, we believe that the storage of spent fuel in the spent fuel pool is very safe. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has looked at this issue repeatedly and concluded that the spent fuel pool can be safely stored either in dry cask storage or in the spent fuel pool. Our employees are well-trained professionals, and they have very specific protocols that they follow to ensure the safety. So let me just get that off the table. I think it's an important thing for me to reiterate.
Mm-hmm.
We have not included anything specifically in the written agreement that was submitted to the Public Service Board because there are jurisdictional issues about what the state Public Service Board can approve and not approve. But we have agreed that we will do this in a timely manner. And, our preliminary schedule right now has the spent fuel out of the spent fuel pool and into dry cask storage probably by the end of 2020. It's dependent on a few things. We need to build a second concrete pad to place dry cask storage canisters on and then put the spent fuel assemblies into the dry cask storage canisters. That process requires us to go to the Public Service Board and get a new certificate of public good just for the construction of that pad. We will be making that filing at the end of June of this year, 2014. We're hopeful that that process will not take long. We then have to order the dry cask facilities from a manufacturer and deal with the lead time on that. And in addition, we do have some very specific industry standard guidelines about how long spent fuel should remain in the pool and cool off before it's moved to dry cask storage. That's typically about 5 years. So, again, there are a number of different ways to approach this. There are some nuclear plants around the country that are just planning to keep all of the spent fuel pool or as much as they can in their pools for an extended period of time, which is a safe arrangement. We, through the negotiation process, heard loud and clear the administration's concerns that they would prefer that we move the spent fuel into dry cask storage on an accelerated basis. I think that either one of those arrangements would be safe, either leaving it in the pool or putting it on dry cask storage. As we looked at our business needs and we looked at the issues that we faced, we think it facilitates decommissioning if we get the spent fuel pool emptied sooner rather than later.
Okay, but I want to stop you there because we don't have a ton of time, and I want to ask you about the money for that, because that is one of the questions here that a lot of people have, is how is that going to be paid for? Is Entergy planning to use money that's currently in the decommissioning fund to move spent nuclear fuel rods into dry cask storage?
Absolutely. The Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund was created to pay for all of the work related to decommissioning, moving the spent fuel first out of the reactor and then into the spent fuel pool, and then out of the spent fuel pool and into the dry cask storage is part of decommissioning. If you go back to the very first orders involving Entergy and the purchase of Vermont Yankee at the Public Service Board in 2002, it has been absolutely clear that the Nuclear Decommissioning Fund is to be utilized first for spent fuel management and for decommissioning when that's done, and then also for any residual money that's left over for site restoration.
Okay, so let me give this to Chris Recchia, because if Entergy uses money that's in the decommissioning fund for moving into dry cask storage, that obviously decreases the amount of money that's in the fund. It takes then the fund longer to get to a point where it is at the projected cost of decommissioning. So Entergy, as I understand it, has to appeal to the NRC to get permission to do that. Chris Recchia, is the state okay with that?
Well, it's unclear. We've reserved our right under the settlement agreement to continue discussions on this and to postpone in the settlement agreement any determination on that piece. Certainly, we understand where Entergy is coming from. But you pointed out the balance here, which is that it's very different if the fund is now $620 million. If you take out $20 million at a time and then it's reimbursed by the Department of Energy and goes back into the fund and continues to grow, that's different than if you have to take out $150 million and that ends up taking years of litigation with the Department of Energy to get back in. So we are
– And Attorney General Bill Sorrell has suggested that he will sue if Entergy tries to do that.
Right. So we need to now that we're into this next phase, this is one of the discussions that we need to have with Entergy to understand whether it is more beneficial to take some money out of the fund and have it continue to grow and get that work done. Because I do agree with Mike that removing the fuel from the pool and putting it in a dry cask is an important part of the decommissioning process, and it's a first step here. So we're going to work through that process. But right now, we have real concerns about an extensive removal from that fund for the reasons you mentioned.
I want to put one other question to you. We got a note from Jeff in Montpelier, doubling back on site restoration. He says, if there is a gap between the money in the fund for site restoration and the actual costs, who pays to cover that gap? Now, some of the estimates have suggested $50 million. Mm-hmm. Entergy has agreed in the MOU to put forward $25 million. And then hopefully the fund will start to mature. But other estimates have said $200 million. So what happens if it costs more than $50 million, Chris Recchia?
Well, I'm going to start, but I'd like Mike to weigh in here. There's also, by the way, a parental guarantee of an additional $20 million up to the fund reaching $60 million, and then the expectation is that it'll continue to grow. The responsibility is Entergy's to do the site restoration to the standards that we're going to work on and agree to. So whatever that costs, that will be Entergy's responsibility, and that's how we look at it.
Mike Toomey, just a couple of seconds. Your final thoughts on that?
Well, I just wanted to point out one thing on the spent fuel, which was that the important point, and Chris made it, is that although we spend the money out of the decommissioning trust fund as an initial matter for spent fuel management, we believe, and we are, you know, we're confirmed this through at least one litigation with the Department of Energy, the U.S. Department of Energy ultimately has the responsibility for handling spent fuel. So we should be able to get reimbursement, as we have in the first instance, reimbursement of those funds from the Department of Energy, and then the money will go back either into that fund or another trust fund that's dedicated to Vermont Yankee. Mm-hmm. On the second issue of site restoration, we have agreed to sit down with the state and work through that issue. Quite frankly, I think the $200 million estimates are not accurate estimates of what it will cost. They represent pretty significant deviations from industry standard practice for how site restoration is done. We're pretty confident that between the Nuclear Decommissioning Trust Fund, which will have extra money left over after we finish, and the Site Restoration Trust Fund, there will be adequate dollars to complete the work.
That's Mike Toomey. He's a spokesperson for Entergy Corporation. Chris Recchia is commissioner of the Vermont Department of Public Service. Obviously, still a lot to talk about. We'll continue to have this conversation into the future. And I want to thank both of you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Jane.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last November, the Champlain Housing Trust embarked on a unique experiment. The organization bought a motel on Shelburne Road in Burlington to use as emergency short-term housing for homeless people. In addition to rooms, the trust planned to offer support services to people getting vouchers from the state to spend the night. Michael Monti is the trust's chief financial and operating officer, and he's here to give us an update on how that project has fared this winter. Michael Monti, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Jane. Good to be here.
So the Champlain Housing Trust bought a former Econo Lodge motel and turned it into Harbor Place, temporary emergency housing. But in addition to shelter, you are also providing services to people that aims to get them into more permanent housing. And that's a little bit of the difference between the traditional model of just having a hotel room. Your organization's hotel is designed to attach people to services that will help get them into permanent housing. How many people have you served this winter, your first winter?
About 500 or so different individuals have run through the program. 239 households, quite a few more children than we thought. But during that period, a lot of the folks that we wound up serving in this past 3 months were folks who were coming through the state system who were part of the cold weather exception. The state has a fairly complex but reasonable approach to determining who can get support at a moment's notice. And yet they throw out those rules when it gets to be very cold. And until today, it seems mm-hmm. like it's been fairly cold in Vermont for the last few months.
So we've were serving more people than you thought because of that, the cold
yes,
temperatures?
We were filled almost every night. We were turning people away. There were a handful of evenings where we might not have been at capacity, and certainly we bought it in November and we geared it up immediately, and we had some rooms that had to come online. We were doing quite a bit of repairs to get the place to a standard we thought was reasonable. So we had November was a partial month as much as anything, but certainly through December, January, and February, it's been cold, and a lot of folks have come in through the cold weather exception.
Now, as I mentioned, one of the sort of parts of the system that is different from the typical way somebody might get a hotel voucher was that you wanted to have services attached right there, offices right there to get people help. Can you explain a little bit about how those have been utilized and if you can show that you've had success with that?
Sure. And that's still unfolding. And let me say a couple of things. One is one of the things that what we focused on at Champlain Housing Trust was to be able to buy the property, fix it up, and manage sort of the physical assets. We then contract really with and have an agreement, both us and the state and several parties, Women Helping Better Women, CVOEO, and others contracted with the state to provide services to folks who run through Harbor Place. So we actually see it. She doesn't provide services directly. We work with others on that.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the services, the other part of what we do is that we're way less expensive, and we have at this point probably a more robust tracking system for the individuals who come through Harbor Place. Again, it's been 3 months. A lot of cold weather folks have come in, and in that context, those folks are just coming in for that short period of time, for a few days, and are not engaging us as much in services. Overall, when we compared just those few months compared to people who didn't come through, Harbor Place, we know what the state has, and that, you know, for other folks in Chittenden County, the people in Harbor Place are 5 times more likely to engage with case management, and a lot of those cases are still unfolding.
You said 5 times more likely?
5 times more likely to work with a case manager than they were if they were sort of placed in another hotel just within Chittenden County. Hardly anyone declined case management services, and we know that we've housed more people, although those numbers should be better. I think I sent you something where we actually housed about 6%. I think actually those numbers are much higher than that. Some of the numbers that I gave you did not have all of the case manager numbers in there, so that's a partial reporting. So we expect that we're gonna be doing a pretty high percentage of the folks are gonna get services, be able to move on their way. We're not gonna solve an individual's homeless problem in the short time there at Harbor Place, but we're going to do certainly a lot times better than placing people in random hotels throughout Chittenden County. So we're feeling pretty confident that that's going to work. We do know that we have to change the system, and the Agency of Human Services does know that too, and they are working on doing something different for the cold weather.
Well, maybe we can talk to you about that in the future, because certainly a cold weather shelter, you know, is another whole topic of conversation that
Absolutely.
A lot of people, including your organization, have been working on.
That's right.
So we'll table that discussion for later.
Okay.
But I'm glad to get some of the results of the first winter and in terms of, you know, access to services, how that is working out.
Yep.
We've been talking with Michael Monty. He's the chief financial and operating officer for the Champlain Housing Trust, which bought a motel and has been providing shelter for homeless Vermonters as well as access to services. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane. Appreciate it.
Now we turn to your messages, posts, and emails to the program. And managing producer Patty Daniels joins me. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Jane. You'll remember last week we dove into the topic of race, skin color, and how people in different social groups perceive each other and themselves. And several of you posted really interesting comments to our online discussion for that show.
Including Lee, who wrote, "If there's any thread running through the entire interview, it's the role that psychology plays in both the causes and effects of racism in all its forms. Once race and color get embedded in someone's psyche, it affects everything. How you see yourself, how you see other people, how you think other people see you, and who you want to be with."
And also last week, Jane, we talked about a genre of writing called creative nonfiction and some of the thorny questions around truth and storytelling. Elizabeth wrote into our discussion that hour about what people mean when they talk about the truth.
Yeah, she says, "If I asked you to recall and write down verbatim the first conversation you had with someone this morning, you couldn't do it. No one can. In that regard, there's no factual, scientific recalled narrative, but there is the idea of truth, something deeper and more important than the facts. Creative nonfiction is about pursuing the meaning of events and relationships, exchanges, and understandings."
Well, Nancy in East Charleston remains skeptical. She writes, "What's wrong with a story based on true events? This new category feels very hokey."
And creative nonfiction sparked this memory for Paul and Warren. He says, "When I took U.S. history in college, I had a professor who taught history through fiction. We had to read novels about the time period in question. And his purpose was to have us develop a cultural understanding of the times. I don't remember much of the history, but I certainly remember his unique approach to this day."
And finally, a note on Friday's show about Ken Burns' new documentary called The Address. The film follows the travails of students at Putney's Greenwood School who are really grappling with learning differences as they try to memorize and recite the Gettysburg Address.
Gail sent us this note about the closing lines of Abraham Lincoln's historic speech. She says, many years ago, I was probably 12 or 13 years old. I'm now 83. And I read a letter written to the Saturday Evening Post by a man who, as a boy, had actually heard the Gettysburg Address and was deeply bothered by the fact that where Lincoln has actually put the emphasis on the word people rather than on for, of, and by the people in that oft-quoted climax of his well-known speech. I so wish that that was the emphasis one hears today.
Well, we always want to hear what you'd like us to emphasize, so drop us a line to vermontedition@vpr.net or find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks, Patty.
You're welcome.
You're going to want to tune in to tomorrow's show, too, speaking of letters, because we expect to get some from you. We're going to talk about eating invasives, all those invasive species that have come to Vermont, both plants and animals. How can you cook with them? If you can't beat them, eat them. So join us for that discussion tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.